What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum as well as some mints. Has caffeine, L-theanine, and vitamins B6 and 12. It's made to help with memory and focus. It's been scientifically proven that these supplements help with memory recall and focus. So I like to chew it whenever I'm, you know, before a workout or whenever I'm training jujitsu, or if I'm, you know, going to be making a bunch of phone calls, or if I ever just need a little pick me up, or if I've got a big meeting and I just feel like I need a little bit of a mental boost, I'll take a piece of NeuroGum or pop a mint, and it just gives me a little bit, a little mental boost. So get out there, try some NeuroGum.
And shout out to our people over at Captain Beard Co. So all things beards and really just men care in general. So they've got a lot of great things. So the beard oil here, they've also got the balms and the butters, and then they have body wash, deodorant, and, you know, you want your place to smell good. They've got some really good smelling candles. So yeah, go out, check out Captain Beard Co. and check out and use our promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchases.
Awesome, bro. Well, how you doing today?
Man. It's been a whirlwind last like week, you know, get the house listed, get it under contract. And then, you know, finding the place for me. And
yeah. What's the situation there?
I'm going to go into the apartment complex where Melissa was before she bought, you know, just keep it familiar for the boys. They're used to that. They've been there, you know, and it's very close. There just wasn't a lot available. And with what I was looking for and wanting to buy, just where I wanted to be, there just isn't a lot out there. So, just going to take the year, rent. I'm just going to pay off all my debts, stack some money away. And then just keep, you know, saving each month and then get ready to buy probably in about a year from now. So, yeah.
Solid plan, man.
Yeah. Start house hacking.
Yeah. There you go. I love it.
So
yeah,
how about you?
Man, I'll be honest, not much has changed really in the last week. I mean, I've been, I did get my big listing under contract. So that was,
that's awesome, man.
That's been a, congrats. I'm very, very excited about that. That's the biggest one of my career yet thus far. Mm-hmm. So that's been a big milestone for me. I'm happy to get it pending. Got an offer out, for those same clients. So now they're selling that house. Now we need to buy the house that they're living in. So, or that they're going to be living in now. So, we just have an offer out. You're helping them out with their financing. So fingers crossed here. Maybe we can make something happen. Just got off the phone with the listing agent before this. So hopefully we can make something work. What else? I've spent a lot of time down here over the last week.
Yeah, it looks great.
And, added some lamps, changed the lighting. I got some more stuff that I'm coming, you know, some more plants and stuff coming. And just trying to make it look a little bit more aesthetically pleasing. And I think we kind of figured out stuff with the lighting and it's so I've been messing around. I've been doing a lot of YouTube University on how to work these cameras. And man, there's just so much that goes into it. It makes me respect Murph so much for all that he does. And I mean, there's just just getting the cameras set up and right. Like, set in the right settings and just because there's so many different things you can do with them, I guess. But like, I'm just like, man, why? How do they make it so complicated? It can't just be like,
right.
All right, we want it to look good. This is the one setting that we want, you know, but it's like, you got to go in there and twist so many of the little knobs and dials and, you know, fuck with all the settings. And like, just compared to like the way the thing comes, it's like, you got to go in and like change all these things. And I'm like, out of the box, you think it would just like be the way it needs to be, but you know, right. It's definitely not that way. but it's just been a little bit of a learning experience there. So, it's a new thing for me to learn. Right. Been listening to a lot of podcasts. I'm always listening to a lot of podcasts, but I feel like I've been diving deeper and deeper into the Modern Wisdom podcast. And really,
that one's really good.
Dude, it's so good. Chris is, man, I'm just like, I listen to him in awe and I'm like, man, one day I hope that I can have like a quarter of, just the way he articulates and speaks. Mm. And one thing I'm noticing that he does a lot, or, you know, it's just something that I find that I don't do that he does do, is I feel like I tend to speak very fast, and I don't enunciate my words very well. I just start like mumbling and everything kind of fucking runs together. And so that's something I'm really going to try to start working on, when, especially in these duets, because I feel like I can focus on it a little bit more, just because it's just you and I. I don't know why. I feel like it's like less pressure when it's just you and I than when we have a guest here that we have to, like, we're on their schedule. And I know I'm obviously on your schedule too. But just something I definitely want to work on. Less ums, less uhs, less you knows.
Fuck. Yeah, well, that, and there was another one too, and I catch myself doing it. I think it was one of his earlier episodes with Alex Ramosi, where he was just like, yeah, I caught myself saying, like, when somebody was speaking, I'm like, right.
I do that too. I do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm like catching myself from doing that. Cause it's like, that doesn't need to be there. No. That's just like an added noise that like I want to make, but like,
I just did it right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it's just an added noise that you do. You're like, oh, I'm listening. It's like, clearly you're fucking listening to me. You're across the table from me. I can hear you in my fucking ears right now, you know? So definitely doesn't need to be there, but we do it a lot.
I know
I'm, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same. Oh, yeah. Same. Yeah. And it's just like there's little inflections that you just don't.
Right.
And
nope. Shit.
Yeah. See, we're going to work on
it. We need to work on that.
Yeah. So, but anyway, we are here today to do our book review on the Dichotomy of Leadership. We're a little behind on this one. We've kind of been putting this off because we wanted to make sure we were prepared for it. And so last, you know, as if anybody's been following along, we've been doing a book a month together where Pat and I read a book. And then at the end of the month, we discuss the book, you know, discuss our takeaways. What were the key parts that we liked from it? What do we like? What do we dislike? And so today is that what that's going to be about. So if you haven't read it, you know, I'm sure you'll still get something out of this. So. Yeah. Let's dive in.
Yeah. So the first book was Extreme Ownership, and this was the follow-up book to that, just because they basically were saying that people were going like way too extreme with it. Like, hey, they had to take like everything, basically like, hey, taking way too much ownership when there's a dichotomy to it. So there's two sides to it. And he dives deeper into this book about being as a leader, how you have to be like, there's two sides to everything. And you know, it was a really good book. Like I said, it added more clarification to extreme ownership and how, yeah, you want to take extreme ownership in everything that you do. But at the same time, there is a dichotomy to it. There is another side to it. So like a yin and a yang type relationship with leadership. And I mean, it starts with, you know, in the first chapter, it talks about balancing people and the ultimate dichotomy, you know, the hardest, he's just said, the hardest dichotomy of leadership is caring for your team while also making decisions that could endanger them. I mean, obviously that's more for like the military side of things. He, you know, a lot of the stories that he tells is military based, but he's just saying ultimately, you know, the ultimate dichotomy is caring for your team, but then doing things that danger them. On the business aspect of it, I mean, you care about your people, but at the same time, you need to make decisions as a business or as a leader of that business that might not always, you know, that could, you know, endanger a job or something like that. Like, you're not actually in danger, but there's dangerous aspects that people could lose jobs or things like that. And you have to be able to handle both sides of that as a leader. So,
yeah. I've got some of the, got the summary pulled up right here. And in that chapter, they talked about a soldier that was killed, under their command and how they, you know, they felt responsible. And, you know, it's, you know, there's only so much you can do, I suppose, you know,
right.
I think that's especially in situations like that, you know, you can do all the training, all the right things, but things can still
go bad
and turn out a bad way, you know. And I think the little example that they used was the mining company for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Mines were losing a bunch of money,
but they converted one region and they moved it into another region, and that manager didn't want to lay those people off. Like, that's he right. wanted to keep them.
Because he was emotionally attached to them. Exactly. Didn't want to put those people out of a job.
But at the same time, keeping those people on is still hurting the overall business and is now threatening everyone in that region. You know, it's a tough decision that, hey, you're going to have to let some people go. Can't just keep them all around because that's going to keep costs high, things like that. That isn't great for that region to make money. So, you're going to have to hurt some for the positive and to help positively affect more. So, yeah, that was, and that's always a tough, you know, you think about that in business. Like,
firing people right. sucks. Man, have you ever fired people?
I've never fired. I haven't had to yet.
Good for you. That's good. It's a tough. I mean, all of my firing has been done in the restaurant industry. Mm-hmm. When I was in management in restaurants, you know, I forget this one. It was it's still like, and we ended up rehiring the kid, you know, like 6 months later because he was such a good employee, and he was one of my favorites because like it was a primarily like female staff, but he was like one of the guys, and I feel like he looked up to me like a big brother, you know? Mm-hmm. And the whole reason we fired him because all the employees had their own like chat, and he was being like, and some screenshots of things he was saying got shared to management, and he was talking shit on one of the managers and like ended up getting fired because of that.
Right.
And I was the guy on shift that day and had to fire him, and tears and, you know, like seeing him cry, I was like, oh god, this fucking sucks.
Right.
It's not, you know, it's different in that, you know, when you're he's a 16, 17 year old kid, and this is gas money. It's not like I took a mom that has to feed two kids and I had to fire her, which I've had to fire people that have kids before too, and that's like really tough. But, you know, I mean, it was they did things that were, you know, there was a reason they were being fired. And it's just not an easy, comfortable thing. It's just, I think it ultimately comes back to us being willing to have difficult conversations. Now, looking back on it, like, that was one of the first times I remember having like a really difficult conversation that, or like being in that role, like big grown up role. You know, you're the boss, you're the guy, you know, saying what goes, you're the person that fires somebody. Like, I remember that being like a big moment for me, you know, probably, it's probably close to 10 years ago now, maybe like 24. So yeah, crazy, long time ago.
It's amazing how time flies, man.
Yeah, but anyway, we can get on to the next chapter here. So
own it all, but empower others. Yes. Chapter revisits the concept of extreme ownership, so from the previous book, but adds a nuance to it. So while leaders must take full responsibility for their team's failures, they also empower their subordinates to lead and make decisions. The balance is between ownership and micromanagement. Leaders must let their team members take control while maintaining ultimate responsibility. So, I mean, yeah, just being a manager, overseeing, making sure that, like, because you want your people to succeed and make decisions on your own. You don't want to sit there and have to, as a leader, which it'll just take time away from your other things that you need to do if you're having to sit there and overlook and oversee everything. You know, and I think like my business partner and manager of our branch is great at this. Like he lets us do our thing. You know, I can always go to him for help, but ultimately he's going to trust me to make my decisions. But if he sees something that I'm not doing right or could be doing better, then he might just like, hey, what's going on? You know, and have a conversation about it. So,
yeah, that's definitely something I've struggled with in the past whenever I've gone through periods in my business of like, hiring people and having people come on and help me. It's like, I feel like I can never find the happy, either overmanage them or micromanage them and so finite about every little thing they do, or I don't pay attention at all. And I've that's definitely a weakness that I have that I need to work on if I'm going to employ people. I need to find, you know, that happy medium where I'm not overanalyzing everything that they do, but I'm also not just completely ignoring them or not paying attention to as much as I should do, you know? Because ultimately, micromanagement doesn't work.
Right. I agree. I mean, obviously, early on, if you're trying to teach somebody and mentor somebody and coach them, obviously, you're going to be a little bit more hands-on. But the ultimate goal is to, as you progress with this person, is become less and less hands-on to where you get to that point to where, you know, you're not micromanaging, you're just overseeing there for question, advice, and things like that, but you're letting them learn on by their own mistakes.
Chapter 3, resolute but not overbearing. Leaders can be too lenient, but they can also be too overbearing. I think this was the one where they talked about the patches. Was that this one?
Yes.
Where they were wearing patches, that, you know, that they had like, you know, some obscene sayings on them. I don't even remember what they were. You know, Jocko basically said that, you know, no, we only wear one patch. We just wear the American flag and that's it. And then Lath and one of the other guys came up with like a patch specifically for their platoon. And he eventually like okayed that one, you right. know, cause it was
unifying.
He unified him. You know, yeah. He's like, all right. You know, I said no patches, but like this one, you know, this one unifies us. This one brings us together. This is our thing. You know, I'm not going to just wear
make
a bunch
sure
of-
it's not visible in front of the higher ups when you come back. Like, hey, right. You want to go out, you guys are out on a mission.
Yeah.
Put them on. Absolutely. But, you know, and I think they had some really obscene yeah. ones. He's like, yeah, that's not professional.
Right.
Like, get rid of those. Those have no bearing on where we're at. But I get that this one patch is unifying us and letting us know who we are, and it stands for us as a group. So I'm okay with that. Yeah. So, I mean, again, it's being, obviously, yeah, you want to be firm in your decisions, but not to the point where you're not willing to make a like, there's some things that you can compromise on that's not really going to affect the integrity of your original decision. That's not him allowing that patch, even though he said zero patches. Obviously, there's some stipulations to them wearing those patch, but, you know, ultimately, it's not, you know, it's not going back on his decision to say no patches. It's not endangering or hurting his original assessment. It's just, hey, when we're doing this, no patches. After we're outside this gate and we're on a mission, by all means, I want you guys to feel unified and have that almost like a little bit of proud, being prideful in who you are and where you're at. But obviously, that can be detrimental to some other people when we're back on base. So,
yeah. Chapter 4, when to mentor, when to fire.
Yeah, there yeah. we go.
We just kind of just went into what we just talked about.
Leaders,
you know?
Leaders must mentor and develop their team members, but there is a point when they must recognize someone is not a fit for the team and let them go. The chapter emphasizes the need for patience and helping subordinates improve, but also importance of not letting poor performance persist indefinitely. So yeah, I mean, again, it's, you know, how long are you going to be hands-on training this person, teaching this person and all that before you let them move on? And then when they have kind of given them that leeway, how long are you going to let them go with continuing to mess up or anything like that before that becomes detrimental to your team or your business or whatever it is that you're doing? I think then you have something similar like that with somebody flipping your house and the work that was being done. Or,
yeah. I was very close to firing those guys. Didn't end up firing them. They ended up kind of coming back and saving it. But it's tough. It's tough to figure out, especially when, you know, situations like that where you've got money invested into them and you're like, well, if I just fire these guys, then at this point I had already paid them in full, which is a learning lesson for me that I will not pay for work until it's completely, I'm not going to pay for something unless it's completely finished. So that was a big learning lesson for me. They wanted a lot of the money up front and you know, for the price and for what they were telling me that they could provide, I was okay with that at the time. But then there was some things that happened and it didn't end up working out as we agreed upon. There was several things that happened and it wasn't all their fault, but there was definitely some things that could have been done differently. We didn't end up firing them. We ended up taking them to the finish line and it ended up being okay. We ended up, you know, making money on that investment, but it wasn't.
But at the end of the day, they're probably not going to bring them back.
No.
Right.
No,
so,
yeah.
So that's part of that. Like, hey, it wasn't detrimental, super detrimental at the time to where you couldn't finish the job with them. But once the job was finished, see ya.
Right. Yeah, that was it, pretty much.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, we've had to do that with a couple loan officers that we've brought on to our team where it was just like, hey, you know, mentioned when we hired you, like, this is where you were at. This is what you were telling us you could do. We let you go on for long enough, but now you're not bringing in business that you said bringing in and you're not doing the things that we know to work to bring in business, at some point when you're not get a draw, so like, so month, $1,500 per paycheck, that's basically like call it a salary. But when you get paid on commissions, it gets taken out of commissions. So you know, if you're not closing anything for a few months, that's just racking up more and more and more. That's just racking up more and more and more that what you owe in terms of paying back. So it's at some point it's got to be like, all right, we're just going to cut our losses, but we're going to have to let you go. Train hard, but smart. So rigorous training is critical to success, but pushing too hard can lead to burnout, injury, or counterproductive outcomes. The dichotomy lies in balancing intense training with smart, thoughtful preparation. Leaders must ensure their teams are ready without pushing them beyond their limits. So it's just like anything, like going to the gym.
Yeah.
You know, like you're not going to immediately start off and just throw 300 pounds on the squat rack and just try and, you know, like you're going to hurt yourself. You got to build up to that. I mean, it's like when starting with CrossFit, Rachel puts you through the fundamentals. Starting in jiu-jitsu, you're learning the basics. Like, there's certain things that you have, like certain steps and progressions you have to take to make sure that you're doing it correctly, so you're not getting hurt or getting burnt out. And, you know, again, it's that dichotomy. You start going way too hard and you start pushing harder and harder on your people. They might not have that same drive, that same passion. Obviously you want that on your team and in the people that your employees, but people work at different paces. You don't want them to get burnt out. Right? It's,
right. You know. But in to push back on that a little bit, I guess, I would say that you do need to train how you fight and fight how you train. You know, you need to simulate that a little bit so that, you know, whenever, like, for example, if you're competing in something, you know, like this weekend I'm competing in jiu-jitsu. This will come out after the fact, so hopefully I got my hand raised at the end, but we'll see. So, I've been training really hard, but so in preparation for this, I've been training very hard because I think this guy is going to be tough. So, you know, it's a, you know.
I agree on that. I think that's a little bit different than when it comes to being a leader and managing a team. I guess. So, like, you personally, like, yeah, you're the leader of yourself, and you know what you're going into. So, yes, you are optimally training to get to where you need to be to have your hand raised. But let's say you had two other people fighting below you that you had to train. And I mean, you're not going to push a white belt and have them and possibly train them like you're training a purple belt, right?
No, probably. They're going to be working on different things.
Right.
Like their opponents are going to be coming at them with different.
So it's tailoring the training to that specific person, but also not pushing them to the point where it's like, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, again, it would be like you taking a white belt and throwing them in a class with all black belts and say, hey, good luck.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. You know, like some people that works for, but not everybody.
No, most people are going to.
Exactly. You're going to get your ass kicked and you're probably never going to want to do it again.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, I think that's where they're getting. But like, personally for yourself, absolutely. You know what you can take and you know what you need to do to get prepared for that. But like, here's the thing, that the fights that you're doing and the training that you're doing now, could you do that for a full year?
No.
You get burnout, right?
For sure.
There's
get injured or something would happen.
Right. Yeah, so you've got your program tailored for what's going to optimize you for that specific fight. Yeah. Meaning you're not going to do this year round. You're going to work on other things at a casual pace so you can learn the moves, learn the techniques. So when that time comes, it's a progression. All right. Hey, I'm 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks out, 12 weeks out. Now I really got to ramp this shit up. So at the end of this competition, I'm raising my hand. So, yeah.
Perfect. Chapter 6, aggressive, not reckless. A good leader at times will have to be aggressive and proactive to solve a problem and get things done. The default mindset should be aggressive of any leader. Aggressive means proactive, not getting angry, temper, but being or being aggressive toward their people. Speaking angrily to others is ineffective, and losing your temper is a sign of weakness.
Yeah. So just being aggressive, but in control of your aggression. You know, obviously, business wise, translating this to business is, you know, taking that like a project or
Or I look at it with sales. Like being too pushy, man.
Yeah. You know, absolutely.
Like that's the first thing that pops into my head is like, man, I would definitely do this, especially early on in my career, because you're just so hungry to get deals. You know, you're just constantly, you're following up with people every day or whatever, you know, you're shooting texts, calling them every day, and eventually they're like, stop calling me. You know, like, dude, I'm not interested.
Right.
You know, and that's definitely one thing that I've changed in my business over the last several years is I'm so like low pressure with everything, you know, and I think that's why people like working with me, because I make it feel like you're working with a friend, and I never push anybody into any sort of decision.
Yeah, and I mean that. Yeah, exactly. Like I think about like how I like to be sold. Not everybody's the same, but at the same time, I'm like, all right. If I get sick and tired of somebody calling and texting me or emailing me every single day, trying to get me to buy something, odds are I'm not. Because I'm gonna get annoyed. So I mean, that's how I am. I mean, with my clients and stuff like that. Like, there's certain time. Like, I'm not the one out there getting them to buy a house. I'm just there on the back end to give them money and educate them on the mortgage side of things. And so, I'm not pushy at all. I mean, I give them information for them to think about on whether, hey, should I buy now or should I wait? Because I'm gonna be here. I'll give you money now if you need money now. I'll give you money later if you need money later. Like, yeah. That's just how it is. And, you know, if I'm going to sit here and bug the shit out of you, odds are you're probably going to get pretty annoyed. And it's already a stressful time. So why add that?
Yeah.
You know?
Couldn't agree more, man.
Chapter 7, disciplined, not rigid. Discipline is essential for maintaining high standards, but too much rigidity. Is that right?
Rigidity
stifles creativity and adaptability. Leaders must enforce discipline in their teams while remaining flexible enough to adapt to new challenges or unforeseen circumstances. A good leader knows when to follow procedures and when to adjust. Hell, we see this shit all the time in our business and on in our industry. I mean, hell, you just went through it in August. Commissions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, shit, COVID. It was every single day. It seemed like something new was changing. So yeah, I've got my disciplines that I need to do, but at the same time, like I'm going to need to make some adjustments. Like and that's the thing, that some of these older loan officers, like they're set in their ways on how they want to do their business, but they're not keeping up with the times with technology, things like that. Like, hey, I think it's time that we make an adjustment to these disciplines. Like, don't be so strict in that. You can allow for changes. As long as those changes are going to push you in a direction that's going to make you better. I think if you're going to do it, if you're not willing to make the changes, you're going to get stuck behind. And we always say it. If you're not growing, you're dying.
Yeah.
You know? So that's all part of it. I think that.
Perfect. Next one. Chapter 8, hold people accountable, but don't hold their hands. Accountability is an important tool, but it must also be balanced with making sure people know the why behind procedures. And the why is something. Why is something that's important? Yeah. I mean, I think that. Yeah. I mean, I think the knowing the why behind whatever you're doing is going to make you way more passionate about it. It's going to make me, at least I look back at like when I was a kid and I always wondered why we were doing something. Why do we have to do, you know, whatever it was. But when it was explained to me why we were doing something, it's always going to make way more sense. Mm-hmm. And you're going to feel way more confident about what you're doing if you know why you're doing it.
Yeah, my dad would always say, he's like, we would have conversations and you would ask questions, but you would just ask one word, say why, with everything. And it got to the point where like I just couldn't answer, so I'd just be like, physics is what my dad would say. And I'm like, what's physics? And then he'd go into explaining what, I'm like 3-4 years old, but yeah. I'm just asking, why?
Well, Calvin's
why,
that
why,
right
why?
Now. It's this new thing.
Yeah. Oh. But it's great, though, that they're curious and they want to learn.
I think he's just doing but, the fuck with me.
There's that aspect of it, too. But, yeah, I mean, the goal is to give people the space to solve problems while still ensuring they meet standards and objectives that you have set forth for them. Chapter 9 is part 3 of all this, and it's balancing yourself. So a leader and a follower. Even leaders need to be followers. At times, leaders must take direction from their superiors while also leading their own teams. This chapter discusses the importance of humility and the ability to follow orders even when a leader may disagree with their superiors. It's essential to support the overall mission, not just one's own agenda. So, I mean, unless you're the CEO of the company, you're still got people above you. And, you know, I think that goes into it. It's like, hey, you know, you may not agree with what's going on, but you need to understand the why to it so you can help the people below you understand what they need to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about, you know, collaborating with the rest of the team, and like right here, leading is all about collaborating with the rest of the team and determining how we can most effectively accomplish the mission, and making sure that everybody's on the same page is definitely a way to do that.
Oh, for sure.
And knowing that why, like it was in the last chapter, is it's going to be a big driving factor to getting everybody else on the mission.
Chapter 10. Plan, but don't overplan. Planning is critical for success, but overplanning can lead to paralysis by analysis. Leaders must strike a balance between having a solid plan and being flexible enough to adapt when the situation changes, which I think we've talked about before. You know, our industry is constantly changing. The way we sell homes now is since COVID is different than how homes were sold prior to COVID.
Yeah.
So,
and even the last couple months with all the changes, things are
right.
Different because of that too.
On our side of things is like everything was so purchase heavy because rates were so high, but now that rates are coming down and people are refinancing, that's a shift in how we have to, I mean, that changes our plans and how we're, you know, spending our time. Like, you know, instead of like, hey, we have past clients that we care about and that we helped, we still want to help them. So, you know, before, it's not like we were putting our past clients to the side. You know, we just like, hey, we're focusing now on the new clients that are coming in so we can help them purchase. But we still did things to help the past clients. Now we're putting a little bit more emphasis on our past clients because our past clients are now, they're important because we can help them save money. So that's a shift and change in the plan. And if we would have overplanned for that, then we wouldn't be in a position now to shift that plan to focus back on our past clients towards refi. It's a constant change in what we're planning and what we're doing so that we can be the best that we are and be able to offer our best services for our clients.
Yeah. I think the chapter in this book was this the one where he talked about how he like packed his rucksack? Trying to like overplan.
Yes.
Like, oh, well, you know, we're going to be out there for a while, so I might need some more food. I probably need some more water. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's supposed to only be a 36-hour mission, but, you know, what if this goes wrong? Maybe, well, you know, I'll pack some extra ammo and maybe I'll grab a couple extra grenades or all these other things.
And then, like, eventually. Slowed.
And then when he was moving, his thing was way too heavy, moving slow, wasn't efficient. And, you know, I think it comes back to the stuff that they talked about in the first book, where it was just like, keep it simple.
Right.
So I'm simplest plans are always the ones that are going to ultimately. Yeah. So, chapter 11, humble, not passive. Humility is an important quality of a leader. Staying humble allowed them to build trust up the chain of command, which allowed them to push back in rare cases when it mattered. Humility is the most important quality of a leader. I think I agree with that for sure.
Absolutely. You
know, people who just think that they're above and beyond everybody else are the people that ultimately are, I mean, not the people I want to be around.
Right. I mean, I agree. I mean, that's the thing is like, we're not sitting. So like for my team example, my business partner and I are the loan officers. We're going out, meeting with agents, doing the deals, structuring the deals, all of that. And then we've got our assistants and our processors behind it. They have different jobs and roles than we do. And I'm not in those roles. So there's something that I may think would work for our team and a process that I think might be best. But at the same time, it may not sit with what it is that they're doing and how they're scheduled, you know? So I have like, you have to be, and I could be like, well, I'm your superior. This is how we're doing it. No, like, hey, give me your feedback. Like, let me know how this is like, will this fit into your routine? No. Okay. Well, how can we accomplish this goal and have it fit into your routine? So it works well for you. So we're not disrupting anything like that. So it's that give and take and being able to have those conversations to where you can make those adjustments because and be humble enough to realize like, hey, you know what? I don't know everything. I don't know every aspect of this, you know, so I need to be able to rely on the people beneath me to have total control of their schedule and understanding of their schedule for them to give me feedback because it might not be efficient or work with the way things are done on their side of things. Because it seems like it's efficient and it should be simple, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's the case. And so if I was sitting here and having an ego and I'd be burning through assistants because it doesn't fit with their plan and how they're executing and the things that they're doing. And so we just collaborate like, okay, well, this is my goal. This is what I'm trying to accomplish. How does that work with you? And we have discussions and we talk about it and we come up with a game plan. Like, yeah, cool. I can do that. Can you do this? Can we come up with a way that suits both of us? And you know, it's just, again, if I wasn't humble enough to say that, or I was just too proud of my own thought, like nothing would ever get accomplished. We'd be spinning our wheels. Yeah. And I'd have a pissed off assistant.
Yeah. And I think one of just an necessary quality of a leader is like a willingness to learn too, you know, and having that kind of like white belt mentality where you're, you know, you never think like, you know, it all.
Man, as soon as you
get slapped in the face, yeah, for sure. You know, I think a great example of this is, you know, our jiu-jitsu coach, Kyle. I mean, he's been training jiu-jitsu for 25 years. Like, he'll be the first one to tell you, like, there's something, yeah, I used to teach this way until I found a better way to teach it. Now I teach it this way. And, like, you know, and he's always willing to learn. He never feels like he knows it all because that's one thing about, you know, that sport is, you think you know it all, you're going to, you know, you'll find out real quick there's someone you don't, and there's someone who knows it way better than you, and there's a different technique, and there's a different way to do it, and there's, you know, and there's a bunch of different ways to skin that cat, and
that's how it is in any business, yeah, anything,
100%,
in anything. I mean, you know, I can relate that back to baseball. There's so many different ways to throw pitch a baseball. I mean, there's a couple fundamental things that everybody needs to do to be consistent, but even still, like how you get to those points don't have to be the same. You don't have to have the same arm action. I'm not going to teach everybody to throw with the arm action that I have. Everybody's got their own natural, like it is. It's just, you know, we just got to be able to adapt. I mean, a lot of this is having to do with adapting, but being humble enough to realize that it needs to happen and not set in your ways that you're going to cause more issues for your team than not. So.
Chapter 12. Focused but not detached. Naturally, leaders must be attentive to details. However, they cannot be so immersed that they lose track of the larger strategic situation and are unable to provide command and control of the entire team.
I just think that goes back to some of the stuff that we've already been talking about, you know, being, you know, you don't want to micromanage. You know, you got to, you know, yeah, you have your standards, you have your disciplines, you have your things that you want your team to accomplish. And you let them handle it so you can step back and see the overall picture. Because if you're stuck in the little things, you're never going to be able to see the big picture. So,
well said.
I mean, that's it. Again, going back to like it works for me is, you know, I'm doing these certain things. These are my tasks. And then I've got tasks that my processor and assistants handle. But at the same time, like I'm not completely overlook, like I'm not sitting there micromanaging and looking into what it is they're doing, because that would take me away from all the other things that I have to do, like calling real estate agents, calling clients, pre-approving people, and consultations. Like if I had to sit there and micro, oh, hey, did you send out these disclosures? Or hey, did you follow up with this person or that person or this and this and this? Did you send that email? I'd never get shit accomplished. Like you just can't. You
and
can't
whack them all.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's, you know, like I have my non-negotiables that I have to do every day. And that's my big picture thing to help our team move forward. And then my assistants have their non-negotiables that they do every day. I don't have to sit there and watch them. They know what they need to do. Go and do it. If they start failing at it and failing over and over and over again, then the change will be made. But they're not. They're awesome. I wouldn't be able to do what I do if I didn't have the team that I had. Yeah. So
I think that was all 12 chapters, guys. So I think that was a good little recap. I definitely enjoyed this one. Jocko and Laith have incredible books. Definitely get out there and read those. They're awesome. As for the month of September, I've been reading something on my own. I don't know what you've been reading. I don't know.
Mine's been more of the mortgage stuff, but I like that book that you're reading. I think it's a great book.
Have you read it?
Yeah, Never Split the Difference.
Yeah,
it's a good one. It's an awesome book.
So I'm about a quarter of the way through that one right now. Yeah. But I have a book that I ordered. Talk about it. It should be arriving today. I would love to do that one next month. I really want to read that.
Well, let's finish up this month. Yeah, you already started.
Since I'm started on that one. Yeah. And, then we'll,
and I've read it and I can get through it quick. I've got it already.
Perfect. All right, cool. Well, we'll hear that, guys. Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. We'll be doing a recap on that one at the end of the month. So
former FBI interrogator.
Yeah.
I mean, it's some cool stuff in there.
It's like such a cool, I love it. I love books that like this one where they
real life,
they implement stories into it because you get read so many of these, like I've read so many of these personal development, self-development, whatever you want to call them books. And they just like, if it's just the concepts the whole time, it feels like I have a hard time keeping up with it. It's just like I find myself reading it and like trailing off. But if it's a story and like I'm following along with like it's something that's going on, it's like, oh, I want to know what happened. And I just always just sucks me in a little bit more. So but yeah, guys, so get out there, grab the book. We will be reading that one this month. So appreciate you guys tuning in. Remember, if you're not subscribed, please click that subscribe button for us. Hit that like button, comment what you thought below, and we will see you next time.